For those of you interested in pursuing a career in financial services or corporate management, you are in for a treat. Our guest today has a wealth of experience on Wall Street and in corporate America. Welcome to the 117th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in." Now, before I talk to our guest, I want to bring up a bit of Accepted news. A price increase is coming. If you are planning to use Accepted's editing or advising services for this application cycle, and I certainly hope you are, I urge you to purchase by August 31st because we are having a price increase on September 1. Again, you can beat the price increase by purchasing Accepted services before September 1. We'd love to help you with your application, as we've had so many others in the past, and I'll link to our services from the show notes at info.accepted.com/117. Now to our guest. Dr. Tom Schick earned his PhD in public policy at NYU, where he initially taught. He then transferred to the corporate world, where he spent 9 years at Lehman Brothers, and from 1993 to 2015 was the Executive Vice President of Corporate and External Affairs for American Express. Along the way, he also served on the board of the International Rescue Committee, where he is currently the co-chair. He is retired from American Express. He did so in December. And in September, he will join NYU Stern as an executive in residence. He has also served on the Executive Committee of the U.S.-India Business Council and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Tom, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Delighted to speak with you today. Can you tell us a little bit about your story? How did someone with a PhD in public administration from NYU end up as the executive vice president of American Express?
Well, there is a story in that, as there is probably with most people who've had a career of several decades length in a corporation. And it was actually quite serendipitous, which is probably, again, the case with a lot of other executives. I started out with a keen interest in government, and particularly with public management, how to manage in large public agencies, with a thought that I might want to go into such work. While I was a graduate student at New York University studying public administration, studying for my doctorate, I took an assignment as an assistant dean and then as an assistant professor in the school at NYU, which combined business and public administration. And so I got exposed to the business side of that school early on, even before I completed my doctorate, and decided I wanted to stay on the business side of things and teach management in a generic way, in a way that related both to the public sector and to the private sector. So I started on an academic career. I was an assistant dean and assistant professor and eventually promoted to associate professor and associate dean of the business school. And then over the course of time, I'd stayed there 10 years from 1973 to 1983. Over the course of that period, I became close to a number of alumni who just happened to be the people who were at that time among the senior folks running a business called Lehman Brothers, a then noted investment bank and trading operation. And they invited me one fine day to cross over and join them. And I remember distinctly thinking that here I am, an untenured professor with an uncertain future, which is always the case when you're not tenured. And I devoted a significant part of my academic life to administration as opposed to scholarly pursuits. So the likelihood wasn't great that I was going to get tenure anytime soon. And here was an opportunity to go into an organization which was viewed by everybody as an elite organization within financial services, and these people seemed nice enough, so I made the jump and never looked back. The thought was that I would stay with this small, elite, as I say, organization of some 3,000-4,000 individuals and rise within the organization. Well, within 6 months, this small organization was taken over by what was then this behemoth called Shearson Loeb American Express.
Right.
So Shearson was the brokerage subsidiary of this very large financial supermarket called American Express, and I wasn't certain whether there would be a home for me there, but they came to me and said, look, you know, we don't know you, you don't know us, this is the new management now, American Express. But what they said was, you know, since you have a background in studying government, why don't you try to apply what you've studied and help us with our government relations activity. And so I started out doing that, and over time, I guess I was impressive enough in that activity so that they proceeded to add to my portfolio other elements that had to do with external affairs. So public relations, philanthropy, and a few other things, community relations. This was a large multinational that had to have representation in each one of these areas. And so ultimately, I got to do a whole lot of things for this very large multinational, and it's been an extraordinary career for me, and I've had a lot of fun and learned a lot and look back on it with huge satisfaction.
That's fantastic. What are you most proud of when you look back on your work for American Express?
There are many things I'm proud of. I guess I could say that I'm proudest of the fact that together with my team, I helped educate people outside of the company to the way we relate to a non-traditional constituency of a business corporation. And by that, I mean the following. Traditionally, the constituencies of any corporation would consist of employees, customers, and shareholders.
Right.
But there's a fourth constituency, and that is a very amorphous but very large and very important constituency, and that's called society. There are expectations that society has of any business corporation operating in its midst, and it's terribly important that society understand that a business, a particular corporation, is fulfilling on those expectations. Indeed, in some cases, wherever possible, that the corporation is actually exceeding those expectations. And so the representational work that we undertook on behalf of the corporation to those external audiences to demonstrate how American Express Company was living up to society's expectations of it is the work that I'm proudest of.
Can you give me an example to make it just a little bit more concrete?
Sure. I can give you many, but probably the most dramatic example I can give you is how our company reacted to what is now commonly referred to as 9/11. This was, in many ways, the largest crisis that we faced and certainly the most tragic episode in our history. Our building, our corporate headquarters in Lower Manhattan,
it was right there, wasn't it? It was like right next to,
directly across the street from the World Trade Center. And so our employees were present on that morning.
Wow.
And our building was devastated. It was not actually destroyed, but the bottom 20 floors were actually sheared open. And it took almost a year for the building to be repaired.
Yeah.
We then had to make a decision as to whether we were going to come back to our old corporate headquarters building, because we were scattered in probably a half dozen locations across three states. And we needed to make a decision as to where to consolidate.
Sure.
And we decided, number one, that it was really our obligation, our social obligation, to come back and help rebuild Lower Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And so despite the fact that, as you can imagine, many of our employees and executives were very nervous about coming back, let's remember that the attack on 9/11 was the second attack on the World Trade Center in that very area.
Sure.
And that we were then and would be forever considered a prime target of any terrorist activity. So there were a lot of employees and executives who were concerned about going back in there. But we felt strongly that we would be sending the right message if we went back and essentially helped rebuild the city, certainly that part of the city that was so devastated, and that a lot of people would be terribly disappointed if we did not do that. Beyond this, what we also did is we took responsibility for helping merchants, who are our prime customers at American Express, helping merchants rebuild their business. So we took a variety of steps to help merchants reestablish themselves in Lower Manhattan. And all of this was with a view to satisfying the expectations that I referred to earlier, the expectations that a society will have of a particular corporation in any given set of circumstances.
Were you personally in Lower Manhattan on September 11th?
I was indeed, and I remember well hearing this extraordinary explosion and looking out my window and seeing a fireball just across the street on something like the 100th floor or the 101st floor. And we evacuated our building within 10 minutes.
Wow.
At that point, we easily had several thousand people in the building. Tragically, 11 of our employees were embedded as representatives of American Express Travel. They were embedded in another business that had as its location one of the top floors of the Trade Center.
Oh, my goodness.
And ultimately perished. So it was quite an awful day, and anybody who lived through it will remember it forever.
Oh, I'm sure of that. Yeah. I mean, I was in Los Angeles. Obviously, distance means that the memories are not quite as sharp, but my family, my children will never forget it, and we'll never forget. I don't think anybody who was watching those pictures and images that day could forget it. But that was certainly an excellent example of a corporation making a decision and considering the impact on society or the city that you're a part of. Could you relate that to the financial crisis?
I wish there was a neat and easy way to do so, but mm-hmm. I'm afraid I cannot.
Okay.
That was a very different episode, a very different set of challenges. I'd like to think we comported ourselves well there, too. But the 9/11 experience was a much more dramatic and compelling instance of how we represented our corporation to this huge external constituency called society. You know, a lot of corporations want to do the right thing vis-a-vis society, but they just don't know what society's expectations are of them in any given set of circumstances. And the circumstances are always going to be different. So making the judgments about what society expects of you, particularly in the context of the nature of the business you're in and the nature of the relationship you've had with the society around you up until that point, those expectations are always going to differ from period to period and corporation to corporation. So making that judgment, and then, of course, making the decision to go ahead and meet those expectations, or as I said earlier, to exceed them, they're going to be very different in any different set of circumstances.
Right. You also have sometimes circumstances where perhaps the societal expectations differ from shareholders' expectations, which may differ from employee expectations. And then, you know, you get into basically dilemmas where you have conflicting priorities. I mean, that's...
You are exactly right. I mean, there is probably no business that doesn't engage in decisions daily that make trade-offs between satisfying the expectations of these four constituencies. They may not even be conscious of it, but that's essentially what they're doing. Because frequently, when you satisfy one constituency, you're essentially not satisfying another. That's not always the case. Sometimes you can satisfy all your constituencies with one act or one decision. But very often that's not the case, and you need to make wise choices as you go along in making these trade-offs.
One of the popular questions that actually has not been used as much in recent years by business schools was describe an ethical dilemma and how you handled it. And I found that most applicants, when they were asked that question, did not really understand what a dilemma is. So,
well, I can point to any number of dilemmas, but I must tell you that for me, I think about it less in ethical terms and more in reputational terms. When you get into the subject of ethical decisions, you really need to ask yourself a question, and that is, whose ethics am I trying to conform to?
Right.
You know, different religions, different sects, different societies will have different norms of acceptable behavior. And when you're a multinational corporation, it is very difficult to apply one size that will fit all. So you're best off actually trying to manage your business for the long term and making a decision that's right for the long term. And more often than not, I think, when you're thinking about it, not in short terms, but in longer terms, managing your business for the longer term and maintaining a reputation for quality, maintaining a reputation for fairness, for integrity, mm-hmm. when you're managing for the long term, you will make the right decision I dare say even in ethical terms. But that's the way I would think about it.
Well, that's how I like to think about it. I'm obviously running something much, 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 much smaller, but that's certainly how I like to think about it. Now, it's been fascinating. I mean, I could continue in this vein for a long time, but I think I'd like to narrow in a little bit on career options and educational options, because that's, of course, what our listeners are most interested in. If someone wants to go into financial services, and I realize that wasn't really your domain, right, when you were working either for Lehman Brothers or for American Express, what are the skills?
Yes and no, because I did work for a financial services company in both cases.
Right.
And I had to know the business well in both cases, but I was in the staff position representing those interests rather than in a revenue-generating area.
But what are the skills that employers want to see from young adults who want to go into financial services, be it investment banking, you know, equity research, sales and trading? I realize those are all different functions, but
sure.
is there a commonality?
Yeah, I mean, they are very different disciplines, and there's no question in my mind, and I'm sure you would agree, that each of these disciplines within financial services will emphasize one dimension of one's education or a cluster of elements that the other one might de-emphasize to a degree.
Right.
But there is a commonality. And I would say there's no question in my mind, having observed young people coming in both to an investment bank and into a large multinational financial services corporation, there's no question that you cannot take enough math and computer science courses. There's no such thing as taking too much of that. And you've also got to be very comfortable operating in a digital world. That doesn't mean you have to be an electrical engineer or you need to be adept at writing code, but you really need to be comfortable operating in a digital environment. Having said that, and that's true, again, across the board, whether one wants to be an investment banker, whether one wants to be a trader, whether one wants to sell various payment systems, that is true across the board. But there is one other observation I would make that may be something of a surprise to young people training to get into financial services. And that is that the one complaint I have heard most consistently over the course of my career in financial services, the one complaint I've heard most consistently from employers, heads of departments, even heads of companies, is that too many young people lack communication skills.
Right.
Particularly writing skills. Of course, I've seen this myself. So it's one thing to have the basics down pat. And by the basics, I would refer to the items that are I mentioned, which is, of course, a good training in math, good training in computing, being comfortable operating digitally. But then over and above that, it helps enormously if one can communicate correctly and effectively, particularly in writing. It is woefully lacking. And if you can demonstrate you have that as well, that would be enormously helpful. I would go even beyond that and say that financial services organizations too often are typecast as the place for math majors, economics majors, business administration majors.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element of truth to that because, as I said, all those things are important. But there's a place for people who have studied humanities and social sciences as well. Employers value highly people who have rich educational backgrounds because they're going to have to relate to clients. And clients come in all shapes and sizes. And if you've majored somewhere in the or some area of the humanities or the social sciences, it's simply going to make you a more interesting person. And by extension, what that means is you're going to find that your clients are going to think of you as more interesting to deal with. And so that's why the typical path, at least in investment banking, if not in payments, although often in payments as well, has been a humanities undergraduate concentration or social sciences concentration, followed by several years of business experience at very low levels, and then going back to study for a master's in business administration.
Right.
And that still remains a track that a lot of young people find attractive and that a lot of employers find attractive.
That was my track.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. And I obviously, well, not obviously, but the social sciences and the humanities also basically force you to write.
Yes, without question. And that's why I view it as a logical extension from the point I made about communications.
Right. I think it is. Are the requirements for going into senior management at a conglomerate like American Express, a large corporation, are they different than for, I mean, ultimately for working your way up into a senior management position? Is it different or is it the same as an entry level? Obviously, the skill will be different. The experience will be richer. But in terms of the foundation.
Yeah. Oh, I see. In terms of the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard, actually, to go to college and select coursework with a view to becoming a senior executive.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard enough, frankly, to strive for an education that prepares you for a first job,
right.
Much less to actually think of education that will steer you on a path that will lead to a senior executive position.
Okay.
You know, the difference for me between a position at the lower levels of a corporate bureaucracy versus a position at the higher levels is the higher up you go, the less hands-on you engage in, but the greater amount of thought leadership that you engage in. And equally importantly, the higher up one rises in a corporate bureaucracy, and here, by the way, I don't use the word bureaucracy as a pejorative at all. I mean it as synonymous with an organization. The higher one goes up in a corporate structure, the more emphasis is placed on an ability to manage people rather than doing the work oneself. And those two things, engaging in thought leadership and engaging in effective management of employees, are things that are difficult to learn in an academic setting and really are gained by real-world experience over time. And over time, what corporations do is essentially winnow people and select those that they feel do have the capacity to engage in those two functions primarily. And those are the people who typically rise to the top of an organization.
Now, I do have clients, and they're usually beyond college, right? They're usually in their mid-20s, occasionally late 20s, and they're saying, you know, I'm a brand manager now, or I'm in biotechnology, or perhaps I'm an investment banker, or I'm a consultant, and I want to get an MBA and then move up the ranks and go into senior management of a large American corporation. Now, so you're emphasizing communications and the ability to manage as critical skills to be among those that rise to the top, to be included in the cream. Are there activities? Because I would be inclined to agree with you that it's not really coursework that's going to prepare you for that, but it's experience and it's activities that will prepare you for that.
That's an excellent question. And the answer is yes. And here what I would say is the greater the number of different experiences you can be exposed to, the better off you will be if, in fact, your aspiration is to rise to the topmost level or senior ranks of a corporation. So don't deny yourself a new experience because you're comfortable where you are or because you know how to do what you're doing. It's precisely going into new areas where you don't yet know what you're doing. It means taking some risks with your career. It means moving around from business activity to business activity. It also means moving from one geography to another, and I don't mean just in the United States. If you have the opportunity to operate in a completely different geographic environment, one should not be reluctant to do this, but actually seize the opportunity. And it's the people who've had a multiplicity of exposures, both within a business and in different geographies, who have a huge leg up on competition for rising into senior ranks of management.
Right, right. And I was thinking that, of course, you took the risk of leaving academia and joining Lehman Brothers.
That's true.
So you kind of walk the walk that you're talking now. Perfect example of it, really.
Well, I think that's fair, although within, you know, what I'm talking about is really doing this over the course of a career.
Right.
I don't think you'll find too many senior executives who've essentially specialized in one area and stayed in that area, albeit at increasingly higher levels, and then ultimately came to be in a position where they oversaw multiple areas. Typically, the person who's actually achieved that level of overseeing a multiplicity of activities is the person who's had exposure to a variety of activities, not necessarily all of them that are contained within a business, but to at least a good number of them.
Right. Now, you clearly have a profound knowledge of the financial services industry and of large multinational corporations and what they demand from employees. If you had one piece of advice, and you can enlarge that to two or three, for someone considering a career on Wall Street or in a multinational corporation, and again, aiming for the managerial roles and officer positions, what would it be, or what would they be?
I'm glad you altered your question from one piece of advice to several, because I can't imagine that I would have one gem of advice.
I'll take several gems. It's okay.
Right, right. Look, the advice, and this is a question, frankly, that I've been asked before, so it's not as if it's foreign to me. And the reason I say that is because I've actually given it a lot of thought. What I would say is, I'd say three things. First, recognize that failure is inevitable. Nobody who's been successful in a career in a corporation or in financial services can say that he or she has been successful without failing. How you react to a failure is going to be much more important than anything else you do in an organization.